From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of July, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will join us from Agribull and Nutrient Ag Solutions. He's a meteorologist and will discuss the weather forecast for the growing regions of the United States and across the planet. We'll do all of that on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. And if you can stay with us through the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon with our special guest, Dan Zwicker. He came out of retirement and was here in the county, so we talked with him along with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities and Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com. Stay with us for all of that right here on this edition of our program that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn in Chicago for the day finished at 547 and a quarter. It was down 17 and a quarter. December at 543, 18 and a quarter lower. And the March contract at 551, down 17 and three quarters of a cent. August soybeans, $14 and a penny, down 15 and a quarter. September, 1355 and three quarters, 13 and a quarter lower. And November soybeans down 10 and a half cents at $13.51 and three quarters. A bean meal for the day at 353.60, down 9.60. The bean oil at 65.66, 66 cents higher. And the wheat futures finished the December contract at $6.93.5, down 8 for the December. And the hard red December for the day finished at 6.57 and a quarter, down 7.5 cents. December spring wheat down 20 and a quarter cents at $8.71 and three quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures at 127.15, 47 and a half cents higher. Feeders for 100 pounds up $1.82.5 at $162.52.5, and lean hogs at $92.62.5 up 90 cents for the day. Crude oil at $71.98 a barrel, about 7 cents higher. The diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.13.4, just about unchanged. And the wholesale price of gasoline, a penny and a tenth higher at $2.25.8 of a cent. Natural gas at $4.04. That's a nickel and 8 tenths of a cent lower, rather higher on the afternoon. The other markets, including the S&P 500, up 42 points at 4,401, and the Dow now at 34,907, is about 195 points higher. Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us. Hi, Mike. Thank you for being with us today. Can we start at the beginning of this week, because it's been interesting for farmers to watch. Many traders were not expecting the corn market in particular to turn lower, though I think it had as much to do with the outside markets as anything. Is that your impression?
Yeah, I mean, Todd, I think when we're looking at this week in the beginning and this week at the end, I think that the outside markets, and I think we have to add another thing into it, is the policy of the we've got the supply-demand fundamentals, the micro. We've got the macro with the Dow, as you say, and the dollar, and the fears of the emerging markets. And then we've got the policy, and the ethanol mandate issue reared its ugly head again late in this week. And so I think, yeah, the beginning of the week was a big wake-up call. It was kind of a clinic to help understand, I think, for producers, the strength of the outside markets and the power it has. I am shocked, quite honestly, coming into Friday's close with the type of new weekly lows we're seeing in the corn, given that we're just looking at ring of fire showers over the weekend, and we're looking at early next week of 110 degrees from central Kansas to the North Dakota, South Dakota border for several days, it looks. And so it would seem to me that when you add all those things together, it's not going to be about the weather and the supply and demand fundamentals as much as it is about the macro, about the emerging markets. And then I guess when you do divide it into the policy and the supply-demand fundamentals, you can say that, well, an ethanol mandate change would sure shift that demand curve down when it comes to the corn. And I think the trade's taking that very seriously.
Yeah, so we can come back and discuss that a little bit, but it does make the crop tour. I went on last Sunday, and the crop tour that you're on right now sometimes somewhat of a moot point, but I still want to know what you've been seeing and where you've been and where you are at the moment.
Yeah, right now on the Illinois River, just at Bluffs here at Evandy's Botel, and been doing some work around this area, and just traveled through Missouri. Didn't make any stops in Missouri per se, but I don't think I needed to, given the shortness of the crop. And from central Missouri to Hannibal, I was very surprised at how degraded the crop was and how the corn was not only short, it looked like it had gotten in later, dealt with some heavy water issues, and then it seems to me that it's kind of turned off hot and dry because there was a lot of stress and leaves were firing a couple leaves up from the bottom already, and this is before this heat comes in. A lot of the silks have tasseled, but I would also say there's a lot that has not tasseled yet either. And so I think we're really at a crucial stage, and I think you're right to bring this up, because if we lose ethanol demand, we still don't know what the supply side is, because we have to remember Illinois did, you know, a 192 yield last year. That was 6% better than 2019. Missouri did a 171 yield. That was 10% better than last year. And Indiana did a 187 yield. And that was 11% better than 2019, I should say. And I think these are numbers that we probably have forgotten. And, you know, you're going to have a lot out of Indiana, Illinois, and Missouri, I think, to offset some of the issues in the plains and the northern corn belt, especially given that when you add up North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota, you're talking about 19 to 23% of the planted acres for this year's corn and bean crop. And you're talking about good to excellent conditions that are now nosediving. They're in the 40s for Minnesota, they're in the 30s for South Dakota, and they're in the 20s for North Dakota with this heat coming. And so I guess I feel like that the supply is still falling faster than the demand, but that's exactly why I want to get out here and see what the Illinois, Missouri, and Western Indiana crop really looks like.
What do we know on the policy front, coming back to that, about the legislation that has been introduced? Sometimes it's mischaracterized as targeting the ethanol mandate of the RFS, and I'm usually really careful to point out that there is no ethanol mandate in the RFS. There's just an idea that about 10% of however much gasoline is used in any given year, up to 15 billion gallons, should come from some renewable source, and that corn-based ethanol just happens to be the most economic of those. Still, that legislation would have an impact. Do we know how much of a chance it might have in D.C.?
Yeah, I think those are two really good points and great questions, and something that I've really tried to start to look into, and I've got a lot of more deeper analysis to do on that. But I can say at this point, Todd, the fact that it is coming from a bipartisan group of Senator Feinstein and Toomey, for the most part, when it comes to the Congress and the Senate introducing this bill, I think it has more legs and has more significance to the corn ethanol demand issues that we may be facing in agriculture than maybe the White House and the EPA and the blend analysis that we've been doing, or the blend expectations that we've been taking on for the past 4 or 5 years. I think this is one of the things that maybe makes it a bit different and makes it have a little bit more legs to it, because a congressional bill passing would be very, very hard to get around, whereas the EPA has a lot of wiggle room as the law is written currently, in my opinion. I think the second thing would go back to your question about the ethanol significance of the actual physical usage of the ethanol. I do think that this is targeting corn ethanol more, even though there doesn't sound like there's going to be much of a substitute or a replacement at this stage. And I think they're targeting it because of the issues of the climate mindset and the green energy mindset. And for that reason also, I take it a lot more seriously than maybe what the EPA would refer to and do. And, you know, like the EPA recently got caught up with the courts, and we I think the markets were able to kind of put it off to a side burner until everything got worked out with the circuit courts and the federal courts and so on and so forth. But this seems to be, because it's more of a direct policy out of Congress, if it passes, would be significant, I think.
It's part and parcel of the push for hybrids and electric vehicles and the demand for gasoline across the United States, which has peaked out, I believe, and began to shrink. I think that's already topped, and factually, I mean, and that it's a battle for a shrinking part of the transportation supply energy, and 10% of a shrinking piece of the pie is worth going after, and probably will be one of many legislative battles that will be following, I would think, in agriculture over the coming years.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think this also, you know, kind of shuts down the idea of getting higher ethanol blends into the gasoline market, you know, the 15% push that seemed to be partially successful over the last couple of years. And the idea that we could even get up to 20% blend, I think this type of bill passage would shut that down in the minds of the traders and the funds, at least. And we'd have to go back and redraw the demand side of the equation for the corn. And, you know, what I've been talking to clients about right now and subscribers about right now is, okay, if you've got, you know, extremely expensive metal prices right now, extremely expensive construction costs right now, and you're looking at maybe this fall putting a bin up, I'd really take a second look at it because of all the factors that we have to deal with. And you bring up a very big point in the short term where, you know, $3.25 nationally for unleaded gas. And we're at the highest since, what, 2014, I think, at this point. So we're going to be consuming less gasoline than we normally do for this time period in the summer driving season. And then we have to look forward to, and this goes back to your very first question about what's going on in these markets and what happened in Monday. I think a lot of this goes back to the emerging markets reestablishing COVID and therefore reestablishing lockdown measures. And I think this is a big deal because of the time of the year we're in, because in the Northern Hemisphere, the viruses only get worse as we get into fall. And we need those cafeterias open. We need those schools open to consume the school lunch meat and to have that end of that summer grilling season and summer driving season to be successful, because that's all demand.
So what should farmers do as they look at the losses this on the week, especially for corn?
Yeah, I'll have a better answer for you, I hope, next week, because I think at this stage, I'm hoping I can come out and say definitively or as definitively as possible that if we stay hot and dry and we don't get anything better than ring of fire showers, the 179 yield is not going to happen, in my opinion, and it's going to be hard to get above 175. And if that's the case, and we do have some wiggle room to see a drop in demand potentially by USDA in the August crop report, but in between now and then, if you get up to those overvalue levels, if you fill those gaps in the SEP corn and the DEES corn, I think I'm very much still a put buyer at this point. It's worked very, very well so far to put me a floor underneath me, especially that last two-thirds or last half of sales in the cash market. And especially given, Todd, in your area and in my area, we've got a major basis differential where you've got old crop corn a dollar plus over, and then you got new crop corn sitting at maybe 20 over, maybe 20, 25 under. Something's going to have to give there, and I think that goes back to that national yield.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzalo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. On this Friday, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass to take a look at the weather forecast. He's with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hey, thank you for taking the time with me today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So I take it you would like to talk about a new term. Well, probably an old term, but one we don't talk about it very often, called ridge runners. What are those?
Ridge runners, yeah. So in the middle of summer, what often happens is we get these big pieces of the jet stream that just go to Canada. And so what ends up going on here is that the flow of the atmosphere just builds into a big bow that goes right over the midsection of the country. Now, we talk about them all the time, the ridges in the flow of the atmosphere. Well, what's going to happen is the one that's been over the west setting all those records and burning all those acreage and causing these really milky skies we've seen here due to the wildfire smoke, well, that ridge is going to open up to the east. Now, what that's going to do is it's going to increase our temperatures. So we're going to start to climb back up to some more normal summer temperatures, even hotter at times, especially in the Western Corn Belt. But storms are going to go right around the periphery of that ridge, around its edge. So we call them ridge runners or ring of fire precipitation because it looks as though they just form this nice ring of clockwise flowing storms. And the question is going to be, does Illinois get to clip into some of those ridge riding storms? Now, for most of us in Illinois, we bought a lot of time, especially in the southern two-thirds of the state, we bought a lot of time with our early July rainfall, and our soil moisture values are good. What's going to be supplying the rainfall in the near term will be these storms running in this clockwise fashion around the edge of this ridge. Most of it's going to target the Great Lakes states, and it's going to target, you know, like Ontario, but we're going to have to see if we can get them pretty far south over us as well.
And so how broad an area? Because it would seem like they'd be right along the line, but not in a very broad area.
That's right. So they tend to be isolated, right? So these individual storm cells, they can come through and dump a bunch of rain. Nearby fields get nothing. And I'll just tell you, the broader picture is the farther to the west you go and get under that ridge, the greater the chances are of it being drier. So I'm talking about Iowa. I'm talking about parts of South Dakota, then coming down farther south through Kansas, Oklahoma. Those areas are going to be dry while the storms run around the ridge.
And I was just looking at some of the temperatures, even for that western Corn Belt area in the next 7 days. They're going to run up in the high 90s, low 100s, apparently.
Yeah, and the evaporation rates, they're going to hit, 2.5-3 inches a week, because the winds are going to be strong in the plains as well. So this is going into a critical time period for the crop there. And just like you, I was traveling through the Dakotas. And I'll tell you, I was on I-90 between Sioux Falls and Pierre. And that crop there is stressed, and it is very dry in that region. So we're just going to be kind of adding insult to injury to that area.
Indeed. What's August look like?
Well, new model data came out before the markets opened today. And I think there's a little bit of weather play in what we've seen. And it was open Gulf. I mean, the moisture just coming out of the Gulf, and the models just put it down across not just the Corn Belt, but the Cotton Belt. They pull it into the Northeast. It just looks very wet. It looks warm and wet. Wild cards are going to be tropical cyclones. We'll just kind of keep an eye on that kind of as time goes forward.
You agree with the model?
I don't know if I ever agree with the model. It's hard. That's a hard thing to say, but it just appears that you combine the evapotranspiration from the soil and from the plants, you add it to an open Gulf flow, and what you end up getting here is just a lot of daily scattered convection. That's just scattered thunderstorms. And boy, if you get those storms at the right time, you can have huge yields, but some folks are going to get missed. So even though the whole map looks green, I won't let you know, it won't appear that way. You're going to have places that are missing out on those rains.
Any reason to talk about La Nina?
Yeah, we need to keep talking about this every time we meet here, because better evidence is coming out with each new long-range forecast that those ocean temperatures are going to cool back off in the Pacific, in the Central Pacific. And as that happens in the late fall, that's going to do a couple things. It's going to increase our risk of tropical cyclone development in the Gulf and in the Atlantic, because it slows the wind shear down. And the second thing is, it tends to focus really good rising motion over Australia, not over South America. And so as they get ready to start planting that next crop, I mean, I can't believe we're already talking about that, but the next cropping season for South America, those folks are going to be watching that La Nina carefully to see if it suppresses the beginning of their monsoon.
Yeah, so that would push back the planting date for soybeans, much like last year, though it was really late last year.
It was, but that follows about a 40-year trend in pushing that planting date back farther and farther.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. In just a moment, you'll hear our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon. For those of you who can stay for the whole hour, you'll hear all of the program. Otherwise, you can hear it up on our website at willag.org in its entirety right now. That's at willag.org. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to it on willag.org. That's the website at willag.org. Anytime you'd like, just click and play right from the website, or look us up as a podcast in Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast too. On our program today, we have Kurt Kimmel with us from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Dan Zwicker is here from Waco, Texas. He made the drive up to Champaign County. And we're also joined by Merrill Crowley. He's with AgTraderTalk.com. Let's start with this question. Dan Zwicker, I know we haven't talked to you since December of this past year.
What's changed in the marketplace for you over that intervening time?
I would say the difference is instead of watching the corn and soybean market on a daily basis and thinking that is if I was a farmer, what I would be doing at that point in time, I've been able to step back away from the market and take more of a 50,000 feet view of it. I watch corn and soybean markets, ag markets all the time, but it's always kind of at a distance. I'm not involved trading them individually. I trade S&P 500. It's a more trendier type market to trade. Corn and soybeans is a ratty market. After spending nearly 40 years of working weather forecasts, water in, water out, water in, is it going to rain? You know, what's the 6 to 10 day? What's the 8 to 14 day? I'm glad to be relieved from that and just look at pure technicals in the S&P 500. But I would say the biggest thing since I left WLL Radio is that I've been able to step back a lot and look at corn and soybean markets in more of a general perspective than worrying about what it's going to do tomorrow or next week. Let's just look at the bigger trend and see the factors that are working it.
Well, we'll ask you about those short-term trends anyway, but we'll talk about the bigger trends in just a minute. I do want to talk to Merrill Crowley just a bit about the trade in this week, particularly on Thursday. I don't think many in the trade thought that the marketplace would drop. I'm wondering why there was that 25 to 30 cent drop in soybeans. What happened in corn that made it drop 7 cents? And there's kind of a big disparity between those two as a ratio as well.
I think the main reason behind the beans dropping was the oil market falling apart. 2 days ago, crude was down $5, and we're not really seeing it recuperate quite as much as we have. Like the stock market almost regained almost all what they lost and then a little bit more. And that's pressuring the soybean oil market. That has been up hard for a long time. I think you're starting to see some competition with Malaysian palm oil. That's also pressuring the oil. The other thing is you know, you sit back and you saw the export sales today, which were okay for beans, but they weren't great. Corn was a minus, if you kind of get off subject here. But the soybeans in general, and corn as well, we seem to have lost our demand market for at least a while.
Why do you think that is? Is it just because high prices cure high prices?
Well, I guess you could go that route. I guess what I think more so is that instead of just that particular point, a lot of people bought with ideas of corn being 10, beans being 20, trying to get prices locked in while they were still fairly inexpensive. And then we get to this point and find out as of right now, we don't seem to need all that has been purchased. It looks like we may have some soybeans that actually get rolled over the next year, and definitely looks like we're going to have some corn rolled over that they bought this year. Now they've got plenty of supplies bought for next year. I don't think the demand is going to go away completely. I think they're just kind of waiting, seeing if they get cheaper prices for the fall.
Merrill Crowley is with AgTraderTalk.com. Joined us on our July 22 edition of Commodity Week. You can hear more of that right here on this station in a moment.